32-year-old Patty Vaughn was looking forward to her future as she celebrated Christmas Eve with her family in 1996. She had separated from her husband, was starting a new relationship, but confided to family she was afraid of what her estranged husband would do when he realized she was moving on and wanted a divorce. Christmas Eve, 1996, would be the last day anyone saw her alive. This is the mystery of the disappearance of Patty Vaughn. This is Southern Mysteries.
It's gonna be all right. These ain't dark or troubled times. It's a day like any other day. You got a dark and troubled mind, all right. You hold that baby tight. And I swear if you can hear me, then everything gonna be just fine, all right. Oh.
Welcome to Southern Mysteries, exploring historical mysteries and legendary figures of the American South. I'm your host, Shannon Ballard. Each Christmas, Jeannie Imes places a treasured ornament on her Christmas tree. It was made by her sister, Patty, who was the kind of person who always made Christmas special. Decades have passed since Jeannie has seen Patty, but the memory of her sister and the love she has for her will never fade. That love is reflected in the ornament that's hanging on Jeannie's tree, illuminated by Christmas lights. Christmas will always be a time that's difficult for Patty Vaughn's family. Patty was the sort of person who would count the days until the holiday season. She just loved it so much, which makes what happened to Patty even harder for her family. The last time they saw Patty alive was at a family gathering on Christmas Eve. They did what they always did, what you may be doing this week. They gathered together with their children to exchange gifts, share a meal, make memories. But sadly, all they have now are memories. Patty Vaughn went missing from her Lavernia, Texas home on Christmas Day, 1996. Patricia Inez Brightwell was born August 17th, 1964. She was known to friends and family as Patty. She was beautiful with blonde hair and striking green eyes. When Patty was 18, she met a man named Gary, who she hoped to marry, but soon after they started dating, Gary learned his ex was pregnant. He made the decision to break off the relationship with Patty and marry the mother of his child. Patty moved on, and when she was 21 years old, she met J.R., Jerry Ray Vaughn. In May of 1995, Patty married J.R. in San Antonio, Texas. Within 5 years, the two would have three children, all born in different states as the family moved for J.R.'s contracting business. In December of 1990, J.R. and Patty moved back to Texas, settling down in Lavernia, about 25 miles east of San Antonio. They moved into a ranch house in the country. They had a lot of connections in town, especially JR's family, who were well-known and respected. JR had been raised in the area and knew just about everyone through his work as a contractor. Patty dedicated her life to her children and her church. Faith was an important part of Patty's life, along with music. Patty, JR, and her children attended church, where she was a vocalist in the choir. She also played guitar and invested a lot of time in her own Christian rock band called Prism and Patty. Behind those happy faces at church on Sunday, Patty and JR had issues. All couples do, but Patty's family worried that she had lost herself in the relationship. In a 2007 interview, her sister Barb revealed that the family had become concerned that Patty was in an abusive relationship. As Barb put it, a controlling relationship in which Patty had not been allowed to work outside of the home. Barb claimed that in the year before Patty disappeared, she noticed bruises and had become concerned for her sister's safety. According to Barb, as tension increased in the relationship between Patty and JR, the control increased. They felt relieved when, in October of 1996, J.R. and Patty agreed to a six-month separation. Patty remained in their Lavernia home with their three children, while J.R. moved into an apartment in nearby San Antonio. Patty's family noticed a change in her as soon as the separation began. She went to work, got a job in the office of a local electric company. She began to stand up for herself and work towards a better life, as she told her mother and sisters. She was doing it for her children. As the family prepared for the upcoming holidays, JR and Patty agreed the best way to celebrate would be for Patty and the kids to join her family for gathering on Christmas Eve, and then JR would come to town and celebrate Christmas Day with their children at Patty's house on Oak Park Road in Lavernia. Later that evening, Patty and her kids planned to join another relative for a Christmas Day celebration. But Patty would not arrive for that gathering. Within 24 hours, her cousin would be filing a missing persons report. 24 years later, her family continued to wait and hope for answers as to what happened to Patty Vaughn. When Patty went missing, her life was complicated, to say the least. The Christmas Eve gathering she and her kids attended with her family, well, that gathering included Patty's boyfriend, Gary. The same Gary that Patty dated when she was 18. It's important to know that neither authorities nor Patty's family have ever revealed Gary's full name or any additional information about him. All we know is Gary had divorced his wife, and when Patty and JR separated, she reconnected with Gary. Her family knew, and in a show of support for her decision to move on, they invited Gary to join them on Christmas Eve. Patty's family said they were happy because she was happy. It's what they wanted for her, even if the decision to date Gary cost Patty friends and her relationship with some folks in town, including her church family. Faith was important to Patty, and so was her expression of faith through music with her church choir, something she was made to give up when someone told the pastor of her church that Patty had been seen publicly with Gary. There's never been mention of Patty connecting with Gary before she and JR officially separated, but assumptions were made, and Patty was left devastated when her pastor told her she would no longer be a part of the choir and the band because of how things appeared and how it would negatively affect the church. Some of the members of the church who had been friends with Patty began to give her the cold shoulder. The community of faith that she loved so much turned their back on her at a time when she and her kids would need them the most. Patty pressed on and was determined to focus on the joy she found in her rekindled relationship with Gary, despite growing concerns about what would happen when her husband realized she was planning to move on. JR learned of the relationship in early December, which caused more tension and arguments between Patty and her estranged husband. JR repeatedly called Patty at work, harassing her, and she would often be embarrassed and scared on the job when JR would show up, fighting with her about their relationship in her workplace. At times, it was so bad, she had to leave the office to avoid another one of JR's blow-ups. In 2011, Patty's sister, Barb Kinsey, appeared on Susan Milano's radio show. Susan was a specialist and expert in intimate partner violence. Barb revealed in the interview that on Christmas Eve, Patty asked her if she knew how to get a restraining order. Barb claims the two made plans to connect the following week and figure out how to file for an order of protection against her husband. Barb said Patty was afraid that she knew when her husband learned she was really moving on, that divorce was coming, that she was in love with Gary, things would escalate and turn violent. That was one of the last things Barb and Patty talked about on Christmas Eve. Patty went home and prepared for Christmas Day with her kids. No one in Patty's family would see her on Christmas Day. Her younger sister, who lived in Georgia, talked to Patty on the phone when she called to wish her Merry Christmas. When she spoke to Patty, it was clear she had been crying, was upset. When her sister asked what was wrong, Patty just brushed it off, said she must be catching a cold or something. That was the last time anyone in Patty's family heard her voice. On December 26th of 1996, Patty's family became concerned. She had failed to drop off her kids at a family member's house on Christmas night. Patty and Gary had planned to spend Christmas night together, but she never showed. When family members called her home, they got no answer and eventually called her office. They knew she had been scheduled to work the day after Christmas, but their concern grew when they learned she had never shown up for work. And Patty never bailed on her kids, her family, or work. It made no sense. Patty's cousin, her sisters, her mom continued to try to call her at home, hoping she or JR would answer. But their calls were not answered. Her cousin decided it was time to call the police, file a missing person report. But she was told they would have to wait 72 hours to file because Patty was an adult. Later in the day, the family received a call from Patty's boss, Del Quinney. He explained that something odd had happened and wanted to know if they had heard from Patty. He told them he had found Patty's blue Dodge Caravan 5 miles from their office on the South Loop 1604 in Bexar County. The van was on the road that Patty's office was on, pointed in the direction as if she had been driving to work. Her boss and two co-workers would later say that when they drove into work that morning, Patty's van was not there on the side of the road. When they drove by on their lunch hour at noon, the van was not there. The van wouldn't be seen on the side of the road until 1:30 that afternoon when Patty's boss was driving back to the office. He stopped, thinking Patty was stuck, maybe needed help. He saw that the van had a flat tire, but Patty was not inside. Del Quinney called JR and got an answer. He told JR where the van was and mentioned it had a flat, but JR didn't offer to do anything about the van. So Del made arrangements to get a spare set of keys from him. Del and two co-workers went back to the van to change the flat tire. That's when they noticed the manifold was still warm on the hood of the van, which means it had not been there long. They changed the flat, and one of her co-workers thought it strange that when he got into the van to start it up and drive it to the office, he didn't have to adjust the seat or the mirrors. Odd, because he was significantly taller than Patty, who was 5'6". After Del Quinney shared this information with Patty's family, they drove to her workplace to look inside the van. They noticed the carpet in the van was wet, and it was clean. Unusually clean, considering the van was used to transport Patty and JR's 5-, 7-, and 9-year-old children. As to the flat, Patty had not had a blowout. Patty's family and her coworkers tested that tire. It had no punctures, and it held air. It became clear that someone had intentionally depressed the valve core and let the air out of Patty's tire. Staging of the van, combined with JR's odd response when they finally got a hold of him, made it clear that police needed to be involved. They contacted authorities and were told investigators would meet them to look at the van the following morning. Patty's cousin, Kathy, continued to call and try to get in touch with JR to see if he had any information about Patty. JR called Kathy back at precisely 7:14 p.m. on December 26. We know the exact time because the first thing JR asked Kathy was, "What time is it?" After Kathy told him the time and explained that his wife seemed to be missing, JR did not seem concerned. Kathy said the family was worried and had spoken with police and they would be coming to inspect Patty's van the next day. It was at that moment that JR expressed some emotion, shouting at Kathy and telling her it was just too soon, that he was going to handle things and the family needed to back off. Kathy asked JR if he knew where Patty was. He explained that the two had a fight on Christmas night, that they were both upset, and Patty got so angry that she walked out the door, got in the van, and drove away from home sometime around 6:30 that night. He said he hadn't heard from her since she left. Kathy asked where JR had been, why he hadn't called them back while they had been searching for Patty. JR said he wasn't able to help because on the day 32-year-old Patty Vaughn was reported missing, her husband was filing for divorce. On December 27th, Bexar County Sheriff's Deputies Ramirez and Johnson arrived at Patty's office to investigate the van. During their search, they found a dark-colored stain on the bottom portion of the rear center seat. Deputy Johnson noted that as he kneeled down on the van's carpeting to take a closer look at the stain, his jeans became wet at the knee, where the carpeting between the rear seat and the van's sliding door had clearly been washed. The deputies removed the rear center seat. They used luminol to test the area and found reactions in the areas of the carpet between the van's sliding door and the center seat, under the rear portion of the front passenger seat, under the rear seat sliding door side, and on the interior of the sliding door. Forensic tests would later confirm that the area under the rear seat of the van was positive for human blood. Despite that van having been driven daily by Patty, used to transport her kids, there were no fingerprints found on or in the van. The next 24 hours would be spent coordinating search efforts for Patty Vaughn as authorities began asking questions, talking to Patty's family and friends. When they spoke with JR, his story never wavered. There was a fight, Patty left, and that's all he knew. Authorities would learn that JR had been busy making significant moves in the days before Patty disappeared. Along with filing for divorce the day she was reported missing, authorities learned that on December 13th, JR had given notice to his apartment management that he would need to vacate the apartment by the end of the month due to a, quote, life or death situation. 2 days after Patty Vaughn vanished, JR moved back into the home he and Patty had shared before their separation. Within hours of moving back in, he changed the outgoing message on the answering machine. When Patty's family called the house, they would hear his voice, not Patty's. As to Gary, the man Patty was dating at the time of her disappearance, he was questioned by police right away because he voluntarily went to the police station and asked to be given a lie detector test. He said he'd do anything to help find Patty. Authorities questioned Gary and looked into his alibi on Christmas Day, which checked out. Gary then got to work and helped Patty's family in their search. JR did not participate in those searches. He agreed to a lie detector test, but never showed up for it. On December 28th, the first search for Patty Vaughn was carried out in various areas along Loop 1604 in San Antonio. It's where Patty's van had been discovered. The search turned up nothing. Authorities contacted JR and asked for permission to search Patty's home. He agreed, and on December 29th, the Bexar County Sheriff's Office Criminal Investigation Division arrived at the home. Authorities began their investigation in Patty's bedroom, using luminol to check for signs of blood. The tests in Patty's room were positive. JR's sister, Marilyn, was in the home that day. She kept asking the forensic investigators what they were doing and what they had found. When she heard what was happening and realized what had been found in Patty's bedroom, the woman claimed the blood in the home of Patty Vaughn was her blood, not Patty's. She claimed she had cut herself. a claim that didn't seem to stand up considering what the team found as they continued their test. The luminol testing that day returned positive for a significant amount of blood in the bath area, a wall adjacent to Patty's bedroom door and floor, along with swipe marks on a mop and bucket in the master bedroom closet. The forensic team also searched the apartment where J.R. had lived after his separation from Patty, and inside they found a shirt with blood on it. There are no pictures from the testing done in the home or the apartment. Patty's family asked why, but they've never been given a reason, and we'll never know why the scene wasn't cordoned off that day, despite investigators' concerns following the test that revealed blood in the home. Investigators have responded to that criticism, saying they had to prove the blood in the house was Patty's before any action could be taken. Proving that would take months. According to Patty's sister Barb, authorities told Patty's family that if the test confirmed Patty's blood in the home and the van, JR would be arrested. Authorities did need comparison blood samples from JR and from Patty's three children. At this point, JR had lawyered up and refused to cooperate. Investigators obtained a court order for the testing, with a request noting that, quote, enough blood evidence has been found in the home at 152 Oak Park Road to believe a murder was committed. Patty's family would be forced to wait 4 months before they were told that there was a backup at the crime lab. They asked why and if there was anything they could do, but after getting no answer from the investigators working the case, they enlisted the help of a local reporter who learned the blood was still sitting on a shelf at the medical examiner's office in San Antonio. It was there because the testing cost $3,000. Patty's family said if they had known from the beginning that the cost was an issue, they would have raised the money and paid for the test themselves from day one. The DNA testing that should have taken 4 to 6 weeks took 6 months. And when those tests came back, they confirmed the DNA evidence in Patty Vaughn's home and van was hers. Patty's family waited for an arrest in the case, but it never came. An investigator who worked this case was interviewed for an episode of Disappeared that highlighted Patty's story. He explained that they did not have definitive proof of loss of life from the luminol testing alone. The scene was complicated, as he put it, because the luminol testing showed signs of blood, but it also showed signs of various chemicals that were most likely used in the cleanup. They explained that despite the search warrant stating that it was likely a murder had been committed in Patty Vaughn's home, they felt it would be impossible to make it to trial and get a conviction without a body. Which is true. In the state of Texas, where only two murder cases without a body have led to a conviction. Further complicating the case was that Gary could never technically be eliminated as a suspect in the disappearance of Patty Vaughn. Authorities confirmed his alibi, but Gary died in a car accident not long after Patty disappeared. If the case made it to trial, prosecutors knew any defense attorney worth the money you paid him would cast reasonable doubt by pinning any crime on the man who wasn't there to defend himself by claiming Gary was responsible for Patty's disappearance. Patty Vaughn's family were desperate for justice. Not a single member of her family believed Patty was alive. They knew she had met her end, and they maintained they knew who killed her. Their goal was to continue to search for Patty so they could bring her home and give her a proper burial. To do that, they needed the media's help to spread the news about Patty's disappearance, get her face out there in the hope of finding answers from potential witnesses. There was an obstacle for Patty's family. Another family in Boulder, Colorado, was dealing with their own nightmare. December 26, 1996, was the day the nation learned of the murder of six-year-old beauty pageant queen JonBenet Ramsey. Outlets that had recorded interviews with Patty's family in front of her van. Media outlets who said they would share the story canned those interviews and went to air with stories about JonBenet that night. And for days and weeks to come, the focus was on the JonBenet mystery. Patty's family felt disappointment, but they understood. Their hearts broke for the Ramsey family. The media may have been focused on another case gripping the country, but hundreds of friends and members of the community in and around Lavernia, Texas, helped search for Patty in the days following her disappearance. They would meet early in the morning, grab hands, say a prayer that they would find some sign of her before they split into groups, searching for Patty with the help of light aircraft, bloodhounds, and mounted patrols. As the days turned into weeks, they faced what countless volunteers face when someone goes missing. The fatigue and frustration of coming up empty. Your hopes turning into fears that you're not going to find answers for a family who has lost someone they love. It seems the strain of searching for her daughter took its toll on Patty's mom, Patsy Wallace. Patsy had felt all along that the answers to what happened to Patty were obvious, that authorities should arrest her son-in-law, J.R., because she believed he was the man who killed her daughter. Tension and rage built up. That anger came pouring out in February of 1997, when Patsy broke into J.R.'s home and attacked him with a baseball bat, striking him several times in the legs. Patsy was indicted on charges of aggravated assault with a deadly weapon and burglary of a habitation. She was ordered to undergo psychiatric evaluation before her case would go to trial. Whether the case was settled out of court or the charges were dropped is unknown. Authorities believe, based on the evidence they've had all along, that Patty Vaughn was killed in her home, and her van was used to transport her body to a burial site. Her killer most likely had help in attempting to clean the home and the van of traces of Patty's demise. But they did not succeed. Authorities believe at least three people were involved in the murder and the resulting cover-up, and those people made mistakes, left evidence behind that can be used in the case against them. But the likelihood of a case remains slim if Patty's remains are not found. For years, the family believed Patty was buried in one of two places. Her mother, Patsy, was certain Patty had been buried in or near a pit behind the Vaughn home. The family pushed for the property to be searched for years, following a witness report from a neighbor who said he saw J.R. operating a backhoe in an area behind the home on the night Patty went missing. J.R. never permitted a search again on the property, and even after he moved out of the home, the new owners refused a search, saying they wanted no parts in the investigation. But in March of 2014, the DA's office finally obtained permission for a dig and financed the search. Hope for answers was crushed again when nothing of interest was found as a result of that search. There was another possible burial site for Patty Vaughn, a site that cannot be thoroughly searched. It's believed Patty may have been buried under an elementary school in Pleasanton, Texas. There have been several searches in and around this school where J.R. was in charge of pouring concrete during its construction back in 1996. Records showed J.R. poured concrete on the site on December 21st, days before Patty went missing. But authorities operated under the possibility that records could have been falsified to reflect the wrong date. The school was still under construction when the first search on the property was carried out on May 7, 1997. The Wilson County Sheriff's Office worked with Texas Rangers to search the area with ground-penetrating radar, a hole-boring machine, and a cadaver dog. Wilson County Sheriff Joe Tackett was in charge that day and spoke to the media when the seven-hour search ended. He informed them that radar had turned up a few anomalies in the concrete slab they had searched, but they did not believe anything suspicious was in that concrete. When asked about the dogs used in the search, which were trained to detect the odor of decomposing bodies, Sheriff Tackett reported they had no reaction to any of the areas searched on the school property that day. The sheriff said the school site was no longer being considered as a burial site for Patty Vaughn. But questions and doubts have lingered. Patty's family have mentioned in countless interviews that they believe her estranged husband knew that once the school was built, authorities and the county would never pay to tear up a multi-million dollar school to search for one body. In 2001, the Vaughn family worked with a private investigator and search groups to conduct their own search at the Pleasanton school site. Fox San Antonio reported there was aeration and ground-penetrating radar used in the search, in which they found anomalies, but weren't allowed to pursue it any further. More searches for Patty would be carried out in various locations as tips came in. By 1998, Texas Rangers and the Texas Department of Public Safety had invested thousands of hours, along with deputies from four sheriff's offices, in the search for Patty Vaughn. All of those hours led to no solid leads. To say frustration kept building for this family would be an understatement. In May of 1998, Patty's estranged husband, J.R., would be taken into custody and accused of assaulting his wife's aunt, Jean Barta. Local news reported Jean and another woman had been looking at something near J.R.'s home when he was said to have confronted them. They exchanged heated words. Jean claimed J.R. grabbed her arm, jerked her, causing her to hit her head on her car. Months later, J.R. was charged with failing to appear for his court hearing for the misdemeanor assault charge. Again, there's no clear resolution to these charges. The situation may have been handled out of court, or charges may have been dropped. Over the years, investigators have tracked every possible lead in Patty's disappearance, and they have tried to rule out J.R. Vaughn as a suspect. The trouble is, the evidence just keeps pointing them back to J.R. They've had a strong circumstantial case all along, but to get this case to trial and get a conviction, it comes back to the final piece in the puzzle of this mystery. Where is Patty's body? In May of 2008, new evidence in the case was made public. A new team of investigators took over Patty's case and revealed there had been a pile of men's clothing inside Patty's van when it was found and searched by police in 1996. Photos of a red workman's jumpsuit were made public as investigators sought the public's help in identifying who or what could be connected to the emblem on the jumpsuit. That emblem on the back was simply the letters J.M. As to whether there's DNA on the jumpsuit, that information has been withheld. This was the year that the investigating team went on the record saying that J.R. Vaughn was still the prime suspect, but he was not the only suspect in the case. They believe three of his family members, who have never been named publicly, may have been involved in the cleanup of the crime scene and disposal of Patty Vaughn's body. In 2012, investigators got news they didn't expect when results from new DNA testing on items that had been found in Patty's van revealed the DNA of another female was present in Patty's van. Non-familial DNA was found on items searched and recovered from the van when it was discovered the day after Christmas in 1996. Police say they now have proof a female other than Patty was in the van at the time of her disappearance. actions speak louder than words. J.R. Vaughn never participated in any of the searches for his estranged wife, Patty. Now, claims have been made that he was warned by a friend in the sheriff's department to be careful, to stay away from the searches in case his fingerprints or DNA showed up on any evidence found in the search, something that could possibly implicate him in his wife's disappearance. Considering Gary was dating Patty at the time of her disappearance, the same could be said for him. Still, Gary was actively involved in many searches and supportive of the family's efforts to do everything in their power to find Patty. Not long after Patty disappeared, JR moved their three children out of Texas. He cut off all contact with Patty's family and filed papers to have Patty declared legally dead in 2005. His attempt to collect on Patty's life insurance was met with a wrongful death lawsuit from members of Patty's family to ensure JR would not benefit financially from Patty's death. In the end, the wrongful death suit was dropped. An agreement was reached between lawyers representing both sides, an agreement that the insurance payout would be entrusted to Patty's children to ensure their future education. Investigators continued to work Patty Vaughn's case. In September of 2016, Fox San Antonio reported a new development. Authorities obtained tape recordings that were given to them after 20 years. Those recordings are of Patty Vaughn's phone calls in the 2 weeks before her disappearance. The final recording was made on Christmas Day, 1996. The day Patty disappeared. In December of 2018, the district attorney assigned the case, Audrey Gossett Lewis, told Fox San Antonio that this is not a cold case. Recent evidence leads them to believe that a few people connected to that evidence have vital information that could lead to a break in the case. Patty's sister Barb once said that for years after she disappeared, the whole family couldn't celebrate Christmas together, couldn't do the big gatherings like they had on Christmas Eve of 1996. Patty always had the biggest Christmas tree, brought the most joy. Without her, it just didn't feel right. Somewhere along the way, as the years passed, Barb and the family agreed that Patty would be devastated if she knew they didn't get together anymore for her favorite holiday. It would take years, but the family has finally gotten back into the tradition of those big family gatherings. The first time they gathered to celebrate after Patty disappeared, they set a place for her at the table, said a prayer for her. The rest of the day was not somber. They had fun, and it felt like Patty was there, in spirit, with them. Now, once again, Christmas has come. Patty's sister, Jeannie, has placed that special ornament Patty gave her on her Christmas tree. The family tries to focus on the good times with Patty, the love and joy she always displayed during the holiday season. And they continue to hope that by the time another year passes and Christmas comes again, they'll be able to give Patty all they can offer her now, a proper burial, and one last gift, justice. Southern Mysteries is hosted and produced by me, Shannon Ballard. Anyone with information that could be relevant in the case of Patty Vaughn is asked to contact the 81st Judicial District Attorney's Office at 830-393-2200. That number will be in the show notes. That's also where you can see photos of Patty and read more about her story at southernmysteries.com. There you'll find more information about the National Domestic Violence Hotline. If you are in an unhealthy or unsafe relationship or you're concerned that someone you know might be, you can call the National Domestic Violence Hotline any hour of the day or night at 1-800-799-7233. You can also get help without saying a word. You can chat online at thehotline.org and find more information about creating a safety plan, a personalized, practical plan that includes ways to remain safe while in a relationship, planning to leave, or after you leave. They're ready to help when you're ready to reach out. Thanks so much for listening.